Hello everyone, my name is Eli today, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is November 23, 2013, or it is Shishlu 22, 2017. We will start our second service on this seventh day Sabbath with a song entitled Yahshua Say. We have heard a joyful song, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Spread the gladness all around, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Bear the news to every land, climb the steeps and cross the waves. Come with tears, our Yah's command. Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Off it on the rolling tide, Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Hell to send as far and wide, Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Sing ye islands of the sea, echo back the ocean cave. We shall keep ears to glory, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Sing above the battle sky, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. By his death and endless life, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Sing it softly to the gloom, when the heart for mercy craves, sing in triumph o'er the tomb. Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Give the winds a mighty voice, Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Let the nation now rejoice, Yahshua say, Yahshua say. Shout salvation full and free, highest hills and deepest cave. This our song of victory. Yes, we say, yes, we say.
Jaden Harvest Part 2. We're going to continue now with our series. We're on page 17. Of the track, Judgment Harvest by the B.T. Harder. Where subtitle is Yahweh's Eternal Throne Room. Because the sanctuary throne was not in the existence in the days of the early apostolic congregation, therefore the throne upon which Stephen saw Yahshua at the right hand of the Elohim, Acts 7:56, cannot have been in the sanctuary wherein is a sea of glass, but rather in the paradise whence flows the river of the water of life, and on either side of which is the tree of life, Revelation 22:1-2. Very obviously, therefore, the throne that the David Stephen saw and the throne of the Elohim and of the Lamb as the permanent throne and eternal. Round about this glorious seat are no beasts, no witnesses, no jury, and before it is no candle and no blood to be offered. In short, it stands not in the sin-laden sanctuary, but in the paradise. It is the sovereign administrative throne from which the infinite eternally governs his immortal sinless being. Unto this throne then, that is from everlasting unto everlasting, Yahshua ascended and thereat sat down at the right hand of his Father until the time came when, in the fulfillment of the Daniel's prophecy and of the John's revelation, sometime after the little horn, power came into the existence, both he and his father moved into the sanctuary throne. Upon the latter, he does not sit as a king at the right hand of the Father, but rather before it does, he stands both as a sacrificial lamb, Revelation 5:6, and as an intercessor, Daniel 7:13, pleading for the sinful human beings. Hence his mediatorial work began first in the holy, then in the most holy. In the earthly sanctuary, the high priest, typifying Yahshua, officiated first in the holy apartment throughout the year, and upon the day of the atonement, the day of the cleansing of the sanctuary and judging for the people, he officiated in the most holy for one day only. This twofold service signifies that in the heavenly sanctuary, the high priest Yahshua must necessarily first officiate in the holy apartment up unto the antipical day of the atonement. Then, during that day, he must officiate in the most holy apartment before the throne. Thus, the earthly services, too, repudiate the idea that Yahshua entered into the most holy apartment of the heavenly sanctuary immediately after his ascension. Very plainly, then, the ceremonial system revealed that from the time Yahshua sat on the right hand of the Elohim, Mark 16:19, where the river of the water of life is, to the time that he and the Father moved to the throne in the sanctuary, where the sea of glass is, Daniel 7:9-10, Revelation 4:6, he officiated in our behalf as a high priest in the holy place, Hebrews 9:12, and that at the same time, conjointly with the Father on the eternal sovereign throne, the throne of the Elohim and of the Lamb, he ruled the sinless universe. From the foregoing facts, clear and distinct, that the only tenable conclusion for to be drawn is that Yahshua immediately after his ascension, rather than entering within the veil in the sanctuary, sat down at the right hand of his Father in the paradise, and from there carried on his work in the holy apartment of the sanctuary. How clear already for the light of the truth at the last is shining forth on this all-important subject of the salvation, so long shrouded in the dense fog of the human theories and speculation, and how solid of the resultant vindication of the spirit of prophecy's reaffirmation of its position on the subject, that the sanctuary question stands in the righteousness and truth just as we have held it for so many years. Cast not away, therefore, your confidence that hath the great recompense of the reward, for you have a need of the patience, that after you have done the will of the Yahweh Elohim, that you might receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he that shall come will come, and will not tarry, Hebrews 10:35-37. Now the thing that we have spoken of, this is with the Son, for we have such an high priest who is set on the right hand of the throne of the Majesty in the heavens, as a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle that the Yahweh pitched and not man, Hebrews 8:1-2. For the Yahshua Messiah has not entered into the holy places made with the hand, which are the figures of the truth, but into heaven itself, and now for the appearing in the presence of the Elohim for us, Hebrews 9:24. Indeed, now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself, as it is appointed to men once die, but after this is judgment. Hebrews 9:26-27, the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14. And now when it says, let's do a little review of what we just read here, where it says, now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Okay, now, and as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this is judgment. Okay, now, and 2,000 years ago when Yahshua first appeared, where did he first appear at? He appeared at the River Jordan to be baptized with John, by John the Baptist. That's the first time he made his appearance known public unto the people. John didn't even know what he looked like until he appeared to be baptized. And Yahshua was born 30 years earlier in a manger at Bethlehem. And only three wise men came from three foreign countries outside of Israel, understood the prophecies and saw the star as a sign that the Savior is to be born, that the Savior of the world is to be born. So he appeared, but only his mother and father knew who he was. And the three wise men knew who he was. But when he appeared on the public stage, was 30 years later at the banks of the River Jordan to be baptized into John. So now, that was his first appearance. Now it says here in Hebrews 9:26, it says, now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Well, he didn't sacrifice himself voluntarily the first time. It was the Jewish people, the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the scribes, and the Romans, all conspired together to sacrifice him. You remember, Yahshua spent his last hour in the Garden of Gethsemane praying to the Father that he might cause that cup to pass from him, because he said, nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. So his Father is the one that sacrificed his own son. Okay. Yahweh Elohim sacrificed his own son the first time. He allowed the evil men to come and take him and sacrifice him. Yahshua didn't do that voluntarily. Otherwise, he wouldn't have prayed the Father to allow that cup to pass from him. But nevertheless, he says, not my will, but thy will be done. Okay, so if Yahshua had had his will, and he'd had the choice, he would have chosen not to have been crucified. It was a terrible, terrible ordeal that he was going through. That's what I believe. But now it says, now once in the end of the world. Now, the is a definite article. It didn't say now once in the end of the Old Testament world, in which the Old Testament world did come to an end at the cross. He didn't say now once in the end of the antediluvian world, when they had the flood with Noah. He didn't say that, even though that brought the antediluvian world to an end. So this world actually has three endings. The one at the flood, the one at the cross, and the one at the end of the 12th parabolic hour, and our day when probation closes. Now here's the thing is, probation closed on the antediluvians at the flood. Those that didn't get in the ark, their probation closed. Well, that's obvious. They were destroyed immediately thereafter. After they rejected the message of Noah to get into the ark, they were destroyed by the water. So that's obvious that was the end of those people, and they had to go through the executive judgment of being literally carried out on them. But at the cross, we had the same thing. The only thing is, the executive judgment was carried out on the Jews in 70 A.D. at the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem. Okay? That was the executive judgment for those of the Jews that didn't make it to the end of their world. They made it, but they didn't make it to have eternal life. And so executive judgment was carried out on them, and they were destroyed. Over a million were destroyed in Jerusalem. About 1.5 million, actually, probably. So, he appeared the first time. And that says in Hebrews 9:26, now once in the end of the world, okay, so this is after he comes and he's crucified, resurrected, go and gets his coronation as King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, to come back 2,000 years later in our day. And now he's going to appear once in the end of the world, of the New Testament world. That's what it's talking about. He's only appear once. And that is to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. So he come at Gilead Center, and he brought judgment upon the Adventist Church by the Gilead Center, because she was representing the whole Adventist world. And so, bringing the judgment of the dead to a close, that started in 1844. So all the Adventists up to 2002 were judged under the judgment of the dead, this first six seals. So that's when Yahshua appeared once to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Put away sin of who? Put away the sin of the house of David, the iniquity of the house of David, which I represent being the leader of. So he started the judgment at the ancient men for the house, the 2002 at Passover. And so he called those out that he had reserved and said, come out of her, and that she be not partakers of sins, and touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. And so we did. And so he put away whose sins? He didn't put away Gilead's sinner's sins. He left them to pay for their own sins if they didn't get blotted out on the Day of Atonement. But those who got the sins blotted out on the Day of Atonement is the one that he called out and received. Those are the ones that he put away the sin by the sacrifice, and typical sacrificial sacrifice of himself in 2002. So now, when he puts away the sin of the house of Israel by bringing forth a purified section of it, and I represent that purified section of the 144,000, that is to be joined to this house of David, this everlasting kingdom of heaven here sit upon on earth. So when Yahshua comes and takes his place upon the throne of David, Luke 1:32, and starts executing judgment and justice, that's how he puts away sin by the once again appearing and by the sacrifice of himself. He has to be sacrificed spiritually at the end of the judgment for the dead to start the judgment of the living. You can't start the judgment of the living until Yahshua confirms and closes out the judgment of the dead. And he starts the judgment of the living by the blood of sprinkling, Hebrews 12:22-24. Alright, 1 John 4:9, it says that, and this was manifested the love of Elohim toward us, because that Elohim sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. John 1:14, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, as the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of the grace and truth. Verse 18, it says, and no man has seen Elohim at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. Okay, now John 3:16. It says that, for Elohim so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Okay. For Elohim sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that he would through him might be saved. Okay, so Yahweh sent his Son, he gave his Son to be sacrificed upon the cross. Now let's get back to our track of page 20 of the Judgment Harvest. It says that, plainly therefore the judgment is to begin and the sanctuary to be cleansed, not before, but after fulfillment of the period for those appointed to die. Okay, now, those appointed to die then would be the leaders of the Adventist Church from 1844 to 2002. It would be your prophets and whoever is appointed to be leaders. And the last leader for the Adventist Church was Brother Johnson. And so it says, plainly therefore the judgment is to begin, that's talking about the judgment of the living, and the sanctuary to be cleansed, not before, but after the fulfillment of the period for those appointed to die. So the period that ended in 2002 for the 11th hour people, that they were appointed to die because those that didn't come to the judgment, then they were appointed to die. Then you start the cleansing of the sanctuary for the 144,000. Ezekiel 9. First you have to get those that are appointed to die out of the way first. Those of the 11th hour was to receive their first judgment, and so there were those that were appointed to die there, and there's those that were appointed to live. Okay. Well, it says, for the judging began, being consistent with the records found in the books of the heaven, for the names therefore of those who are found unworthy without the wedding garment on are blotted from the books. Thus is the sanctuary cleansed. Okay, so we had a cleansing of the sanctuary in 2002. At the atonement, those that didn't follow the message given to them from heaven earlier that year, then they didn't get their filthy garments removed, and they got their names blotted from the books on the Day of Atonement. Thus is the sanctuary cleansed. What sanctuary? The sanctuary at Gilead Center was cleansed. It wasn't talking about the heavenly sanctuary in heaven that represents the house of Israel here on earth at this time. It's talking about the sanctuary that had the sinners in it that were being judged first. So that's the sanctuary that was cleansed in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Speaking of the commencement of this work of the judging and cleansing, the angel said unto Daniel, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Okay. So now, after the 1844, the 2300 days fulfillment, and William Miller thought that on the atonement of 1844 that the sanctuary is going to be cleansed by the burning of the earth up with the fire and taking the waiting saints to heaven. Well, the sanctuary was cleansed by Yahshua in the heavens. He entered into the most holy place on the Day of Atonement. He cleansed the sanctuary of all of those that had records kept up to 1844. Okay. By his own blood, he went in and cleansed the sanctuary there in 1844. He had to cleanse it to start the judgment of the dead first and foremost. And then after the judgment of the dead is finished in 2002, he had to cleanse it again to start the judgment of the living. Okay. And it said, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be canned, starting in 1844. Okay, so now it says, the sanctuary is cleansed to start the judgment of the dead, and it was cleansed to close out the judgment of the dead in 2002. And that also served as the opening up of the work then for the 12th hour, for the judgment of the living. Since the cleansing accordingly takes place at the termination of the 2300 days, and since it is, as we have seen, the judgment which takes place in the end of the world, Daniel 9:26, consequently, the termination of the days and the beginning of the mediatorial judicial work of the Yahshua are, upon the authority of the inspiration itself, timed unto the end of the world. Hence, conclusively, the 2300 days do not end in the days of the Antiochus Epiphanes, as some teach they do. For this untenable position on the subject, along with the other similarly unsupportable views on it, therefore makes necessary, in order to establish the very date of the cleansing, our first dispelling of the confusion concerning of the 2300 days. Those who are in the opposition unto the doctrine that the 2300 days are find their terminus in the end of the world are among themselves at the strong variance over when the days do supposedly end, just as they are over the truth of a multitude of the other doctrines. Fully evident, therefore, is the fact that none of them have the truth on the subject. And yet, in spite of this fact, they fail to see that the Spirit, which has led them into their present state of the schism, doctrinal difference, strife, and confusion, unparalleled in the history, cannot possibly be the Spirit of the truth, who alone can lead them into the truth of the 2300-day prophecy. Thus they continue darkening Christendom with what they imagine and proclaim to be light on it, and the effort for the supporting of their position they bring in the Septuagint, the Vulgate, and the English Revised Version. For these in the order named, variously render the number in the Daniel 8:14, as the 2400, 2200, and 2300 evening morning. For this difference alone is with the ample proof that the renderings are not as the sound results of the exact literal translation of the verse, rather are the product of the interpretative translations of it, engendered of the theological preconceptions on the subject. Nevertheless, even these renderings as they stand lend such feeble plausibility unto the theories held in the opposition unto the doctrine that the 2300 days terminate in the end of the world, as to compel the theorizers to read into the Daniel 8:14 of the word is sacrificed, so as to transform the evening morning phase of the text to read evening morning sacrifices. Well, now this is right. When you restore the daily, then you have the evening and the morning sacrifices at those two times of the day. Okay, now this is, see, V.T. Hall failing to understand the restoration of the sanctuary, and rightly so, he did restore the sanctuary. Yet, he became a commentary on the daily. See, this is what I'm talking about. I just read to you earlier where it said Yahshua appeared once in the end of the world to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And he did that in 2002 to fulfill the prophecies in Revelation 11 about the two witnesses that are sacrificed, and their dead bodies lay in the street 3.5 years. That is Yahshua being crucified in the Word. And he voluntarily crucified himself a second time. Next on the ground that there were two sacrifices a day. Okay. Well, they are two sacrifices a day, according to the law of Moses. They split the number of them in half, and the number being 2,400, 2,200, and 2,300, depending on which subversion they use. They get respectively 1,200, 1,100, 1,150 days. This adding to and cutting down, they then boldly put forth in the proof of their theory, although there is no escaping the crystal clear meaning of the evening, morning. When viewed in the light of Genesis 1:5, which, as every scripture student well knows, can only mean a 24-hour period, both the night and the day, and which has nothing to do with the sacrifices. Okay. Very plainly, therefore, the numbers 2,400, 2,200, and the interpolation of the word sacrifices are the vain results of the false interpretation of the Daniel's prophecy. Now, this is correct. Vitalis is right on this. The theorizers tried to make the evening and the morning to parallel with the evening and with the morning and the evening sacrifices of the daylight hour. That was done in the 12-hour period of daylight. I can understand why V.T. Hall explained this discrepancy like he did. For the discrepancy between the two figures is due to the difference in the dates necessary to work out the different ideas on the text, exposing both the ambition and the fate of those responsible for this vain attempt to place the fulfillment of the prophecy that Yahshua declared unto the Daniel. Also the robbers of thy people shall exalt themselves to establish a vision, but they shall fall. Daniel 11:14. Though the endeavor of these robbers of the Elohim people to make the vision fit their ideas is doomed to failure, yet in their blind self-confidence they still try their best to establish it, even going so far in the effort as to make the writings of the Josephus seem to speak of a sacred history in the support of their theory. And indeed, it so came to pass, says the Jewish historian, in a passage which they most commonly use, that our nation suffered these things under the Antiochus Epiphanes, according to Daniel's vision, and what he wrote years before they came to pass. Antiquities, Book 12, Chapter 5. Though Josephus does not even remotely allude unto the number of the days mentioned in Daniel 8:14, yet because he does apply the vision in the work of the Antiochus Epiphanes, they in effect take him as a prophet, with the inspiration for the interpreting of the scriptures, being merely a historian, though, and not a prophet, he, accordingly, in the writing of the history of the Jews, made only a historical application of the similarity which he saw between the Daniel's prediction and Antiochus' work, and such was well within his province as a historian. For his not having the gift of the prophecy is with the forbidding of the Elohim's people from the accepting of his applications of the scriptures as the authoritative and dependable. From this sort of the resting, juggling, rationalizing, and explaining away of the simple facts is with the candid reader as seeing unto what lengths men are going in the order for the dodging of the revealed truths, which they do not like, and for the locking arms with the private theories unto their liking. For true, indeed, is the sin. Give a man a theory, and the facts will come trooping after. With the mist of the era now dispelled, our way is clear for the proceeding and the ascertaining when the 2300 days begin and end. From Daniel 7, it was seen that the throne of the judgment, or of the cleansing, is not to be set up until sometime after the little horn tower came into the existence. While from the Hebrews 9:24-27, it was seen to be set up sometime before the end of the world. Okay, now this end of the world is at the end of the 11th parabolic hour, beginning in the 12th parabolic hour. That's what this prophecy is talking about here in Daniel 9:24-27. For it was seen to be set up sometime before the end of the third time of the world. That's at the end of the 6,000-year period. Now, to throw into the full focus of the light on the facts already brought forth, we must go to Daniel 8 and 11. Unto the express prophecy of the subject, the 2300 days. Okay, now it says in Daniel 8, 11, and 12, yea, he magnified himself even unto the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down, and a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of the transgression. And it cast down the truth onto the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Daniel 11:31. An arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of the strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. From this juxtaposition of Daniel 8:11-12 and Daniel 11:31. The reader will observe that both scriptures are speaking of the same power. And Yahshua, by the prediction of the signs of the end of the world, as he looked forward along the stream of time, declared, when ye, his followers, who were to be living at the time that this horn power was at work against Elohim, his truth, and his people, therefore shall see the abomination of the desolation spoken of by the Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. And let them which be in Judea flee unto the mountain. Matthew 24:15-16. These clear words of Yahshua himself placed the work of this power in the future from his time. Here Yahshua plainly states that at his time the abomination of the desolation had not yet stood up in the holy place, but that at some time in the Christian dispensation it would be seen to stand there. Still further, the angel instructed Daniel that at the time of the end shall be the vision. Okay. Vision of what? When the abomination that maketh desolate stands in the holy place. And so the time of the end came in 2002. So you close out the end of the Adventist world for the judgment of the dead and to start the judgment of the living. At Gilead Center it passed over 2002. That's when this vision made its fulfillment. And who was standing in the holy place? The prophet to Laodicea, Brother Johnson. And what was he doing there? He was teaching a counterfeit system of true worship and telling the people that this is the right way, walk ye in it. So, and it says that in Daniel 8:13-17, for these two facts carry sweeping proof that the 2300 period could not terminate until falling of the Asherah time, the daily be cast out, and the abomination sit up. For both of these events were to take place within the 2300 days. Well, we know in the top it did, with the Pope standing in the holy place, representing the abomination of desolation, in the top. Because he cast the sanctuary system and the Sabbath and the daily to the ground and trampled upon it. For this desolating power was, according unto Daniel, to pollute by transgression the earthly sanctuary or church. This was to be accomplished by the casting down of the truth onto the ground, by the taking away of the daily, and by the bringing into the holy place of the abomination that maketh desolate. All of which was to be, said the angel, under 2300 days, and then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. From the way the evidence is here amassed, there is manifestly but one conclusion possible. For the polluting of the holy place, the termination of the 2300 days, and the cleansing of the sanctuary could not have taken place before the Yahshua's time. Facing the resounding finality of this threefold conclusion, the numerous voices which insistently localized within the Old Testament period the events bound up with the 2300 days ought now to silence themselves completely and forever. But if they do not, then Elohim only knows what they may next proclaim. For you cannot afford, brethren, now that the light has come, to let slip from you the opportunity of the breaking away from the theories of the man, herein discredited by the Spirit of the Truth, and of the placing your feet firmly on the solid foundation here established, and their place by the testimony of the Yahshua Messiah. Upon this solid rock, the structure of the truth now in the building will, as the reader can already see, withstand the most severe storm of the both wind and rain. So let us, in the proceeding to erect this superstructure, liberally utilize without the slightest fear of the coming storm, which will demolish and sweep away everything standing on a sandy foundation of the material so freely given. For the cleansing of the earthly sanctuary and the abomination which the wicked power here under the discussion brought in must necessarily be cast out, and then the truth also of the daily must be then firmly established, I'm adding those words myself, that the same power that trod down and cast out must be restored. Brother Johnson was the last one to have the power to resurrect the daily, which he did in 1970. He had the power to tramp it back down on the foot, which he did. Okay, so I just put rephrasing on what was written here. Then the truth also of the daily, that the same power that established it in 1970, Brother Johnson, also used his power to cast it down according to his discretion. Very obviously, therefore, there is not the slightest room for the doubt as to either the way in which the sanctuary was polluted. How was it polluted? By being restored and set up. And then the same people that restored and set it up are the ones that, whenever they apostatize and set up a counterfeit system of worship in the place of the true worship, then that's what you call polluting the sanctuary. Or the way in which it must be cleansed. And the way it was cleansed was the casting out of those polluters when the judgment of the living began. That defiled the sanctuary. And that starts with the ancient men for the house. That started with the prophet, Rhodes Johnson. at the Passover 2002, and it was, the sanctuary was then completely completed, the cleansing by the atonement of 2002, fulfilling this Daniel 9:24-27. That's where it says the vision is to be understood at the time of the end. Well, that's what the vision is. It's being understood and explained. For the 8th chapter of the book of the Daniel contains a vivid prophetic symbolism of the two beasts, a ram and a he-goat, concerning which the angel explained, the ram which thou sawest, having two horns, the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of the Grecia, Daniel 8:20-21. For the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great, toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the pleasant land. Daniel 8:8-9. For the great horn that is between his eyes, explained the angel, is the first king, Alexander. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power, not in the Alexander's power, that is, not unto his posterity, Daniel 8:21-22-11:4. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors, the Jews, are come unto the full, a king of the fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, for the arm shall stand on his part, Daniel 11:31, as the armies of the civil powers, and he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people, Daniel 8:23-24. Obviously then, Daniel 8:22-24 is parallel with the Daniel 7:25, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of the time. For the Daniel had the vision in Babylon, northeast of the pleasant land, Palestine, from the Babylon, the exceeding great horn, went first south, next east, then north, in order to make the turn westward, toward the pleasant land. Thus it went in all four directions, denoting that it became a world power. Moreover, also the brass of the great image of the Daniel 2, which Daniel explains is to bear rule over all the earth, represents Grecia. However, as neither the goat's first horn nor his subsequent four horns bore of the universal rule, then for the fulfillment of the prophecy of the brass kingdom, his exceeding great horn must be the one to bear rule over all the earth. Daniel 2:39. Though the fourth piece of the Daniel 7 shows that this desolating power is descended from the Rome, as a symbolism of the he-goat goes further back, for the showing that this world power originally descended from one of the Grecian division, Daniel 11:5, and later put on the garb of the Christianity as religion of a God whom his fathers knew not, verse 38. Gradually assuming of the ornaments of the sanctuary, he before long magnified himself against the prince, Yahshua of the host, and that was the Christian. And disregarding the God of his fathers, he ostensibly became Christianized, but at what cost unto for the Christianity? Not only was the deity taken away, okay, now we bring this fast forward, not only was the deity taken away in 2002 by the false prophet, Brother Johnson, but also the place of his sanctuary was cast down. what was the place of his sanctuary? Kermit, Texas was the place of his sanctuary for the Mount Zion at the 11th hour that Rhodes Johnson was put in charge of as a ministering priest. Joel 2:15, let the priests, no, 2:17, let the priests, the ministers of the Yahweh, weep between the porch and the altar. Okay? That's your daily, between the two dailies. In other words, he cast down the Yahshua's place and there set up his own by the elevating of himself unto the Yahshua's place. Folks, this actually happened in reality, and my wife and I are witnessing it coming out of the mouth of the false prophet himself. When, in the presence of my wife, he says, "Cheer up, man, you're being crucified." And at that very moment, Brother Johnson says, "Well, if I'm being crucified, I must be the untypical Messiah." Okay, there you have it. For the word sacrifice being supplied in the connection with the word daily, it manifestly belongs unto the text. Now, V.T.R. said it does not, quoting Ellen G. White, but I changed that to it manifestly does belong to the text. Since, however, the English language does not have an exact equivalent of the Hebrew word daily, and why doesn't it? It does have an equivalent. The word continual, the word perpetual. Just the word daily itself gives it a correct transliteration of the true meaning of the Hebrew by just going back to the law of Moses and establishing what the daily is. It's established at the third hour and the ninth hour of the day by law. So yeah, there is a correct rendering. But you always have to trace the true meaning of it back to the law, which is variously rendered continual, perpetual, everlasting. There you are. And since none of these terms are synonymous, yes, but they are synonymous. See, the Vitihara, he's saying none, but they are synonymous. Then they carry individual connotation, for it is consequently imperative for the taking them all together as a compound word so as to arrive at the exact truth. So what does it mean, take them all as a compound word? Okay. You take continual, perpetual, everlasting. But you only use two of those to make it a compound noun. That's what the compound means. Two, not two or more. You can take continual, perpetual, meaning the same thing as the daily, or you can take perpetual and everlasting, meaning the same thing as the daily, or you can take everlasting and put it with continual, meaning the daily. That's your compound noun. Just like Yahweh Elohim is a compound noun, name of the one person, Yahweh the Father. That's just like Yahshua Messiah. That's a compound of a name and a title put together, forming a compound noun. The name being Yahshua and the title being Messiah. Okay. So now I'll reread this last statement in the positive that I had just read earlier. So it says, now carry individual connotation. It is a consequent imperative for the taking them all together as a compound word, so as to arrive at the exact truth in the view, therefore, of this fact, also the fact that the Sabbath doctrine is the only biblical doctrine in the Christian era. That's in the New Testament era, that can possibly be designated as a daily. No, it cannot be. Unless you negate the law and don't use the law to back up the daily or the Sabbath. And so, V.T. Hartman, he's trying to say that the Sabbath is the only doctrine that can designate the daily. Meaning that the daily comes once a week. Well, you see, And indeed, the Holy Spirit established the law of Moses to back up his the doctrinal teachings, his interpretation of the Sabbath and the daily. Moses had already interpreted the Sabbath and the daily. He had already established it by law. So where does V.T. Hoff come along saying now in the New Testament Christian era that the Sabbath and the daily has a different understanding? You see the confusion V.T. Hoff fell into by not following Isaiah 8:20 like all the prophets were admonished to do, and everybody. If you're going to prove anything, prove it to the law and the testimony. If they speak not according to his word, there's no light in them. But there's no light in this, what V.T. Hollis is doing here. And that's the reason why Yahweh cut his time short and put him in his grave. Because this is what he was doing. He was establishing the New Testament law era without law. Without the law of Moses backing up what he was trying to interpret as the unfolding of the law of Moses. So it says, now if I was breaking this news to you, I'd say in view, therefore, of this fact also, the fact that the Sabbath doctrine is the not the biblical doctrine in the Christian era that can possibly be designated as a daily. No, because it's not backed up by the law of Moses, pertaining unto the worship and respect unto a day. Yeah? The Sabbath is always referred to as in respect of a designated day every week, the seventh day. As well as the continual, perpetual, and everlasting from time immemorial to the time eternal, it is hence evident that all these various renderings can apply unto no other doctrine in the Sabbath as a true eternal rest day, and in the divine certification of its perpetuity rang on through the centuries from the Sinai with the immutable words. Wherefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, that's the seventh day Sabbath, to observe the seventh day Sabbath throughout their generations, that's once a week on the seventh day according to the creation week that it was set up in, for a perpetual covenant. Now how hard is that? For it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Yahweh made the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed, Exodus 31:16-17. This brings the close of us at this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Sunshine in the soul. There's sunshine in my soul today, more glorious and bright than those in any earthly sky. For Yahshua is my light, oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy home is rolled. Yahshua shows a smiling face, there's sunshine in the soul. There's music in my soul today, a carol to my King. And Yahshua listening can hear the songs I cannot say. Oh, the sun, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy moments roll, and Yahshua shows his smiling face, his sunshine in the soul. There's springtime in my soul today, for when Yahshua is near, the dove of peace in my heart, the flowers of grace appear. For the sunshine, blessed sunshine, when the peaceful, happy moments roll, and Yahshua shows his smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul.
There's gladness in my soul today, and hope and praise and love. For blessing which He gives me now, for joys lit up above. Oh, the sunshine, blessed sunshine, and the peaceful, happy moments flow. When Yahshua shows His smiling face, there is sunshine in the soul.